Dinner is outstanding. Right. We leave El Capitolio and decide we're going to come back. And in order to get into the nightclubs, you got to have long pants on. So we didn't have long pants on. So we came back, decided to change our clothes, maybe have a cocktail, you know. And we said, let's go back to the Bodeguita and, like, start our evening there again like we were before. Because we kind of like the vibe of the bar there.
Well, yeah, we like the Italian stewardesses.
And, no,
yeah,
we there,
we like the Cuba Libres. At this point, we had switched to Cuba Libres.
This place is like in an alley.
Now, the Cuba Libre, alleyway. Yeah, it is. And a Cuba Libre is basically a Pepsi with a little lemon juice, a little rum, and a lime inside the drink. Mm-hmm. So that is a very refreshing cocktail.
And let's talk about our driver here, because he was a good guy.
Roberto.
You were talking to him.
Roberto.
You had him waiting for us the whole night.
I told Roberto, we're going to take care of you at the end of the night, and you just stick with us, my friend.
And he did. He didn't go anywhere. In New York, that guy would have been out of there in a second.
He stood against the wall outside the bars waiting for
us. Smoking a cigarette, just waiting for ours.
But believe me, he was well compensated.
So we're getting into the crescendo of the story. This is the key part of the story. We walk in and we had one Cuba Libre. And then we had a second Cuba Libre.
Uh-huh.
And we really didn't want to stay long. We had a plan to maybe
stay. We were going to one of the
state-owned discos.
So what happens is Scott looks up and
No, we were watching the baseball game, and we were starting to feel good. We didn't want to leave because the Cuba Libres were flying.
They were flying.
My back was to the door, so I didn't know what was going on.
Okay, so Scott looks up and says, we have a Woody sighting.
Scott Nestor, there's Woody Harrelson.
There's Woody Harrelson. What the hell is he doing here?
And this bar is the size of...
There's about 10 people in the bar.
This bar, the front part of the bar, I want to say... I mean, I want to compare it to something, but
it's
I can't.
Half... of John Stevens bar. I mean, it's
sort of like the front of Ledbetter's, would you say?
Yeah.
But not even that big.
Not even that big.
Not even that big.
Not even that big.
I'm trying to compare it to something maybe like the Towson area. I mean, the bar at Michael's is twice as big as this. This is a bar that if 30 people are in there.
It would be elbow to elbow.
Complete elbow to elbow. I mean, 15 to 20 comfortably. So Woody Harrelson walks in.
With a couple high school teacher-looking guys.
Yeah, a couple of middle-aged white guys.
We weren't even paying attention
to
that.
We weren't paying attention to that because it's Woody.
Right.
And no one recognizes Woody. It's all Spanish-speaking people, Cuban people.
Yeah.
So nobody knows who Woody is.
And my back's to the door, and the next thing I hear, I'm looking at you, we're drinking our drink. Hey, Woody, why don't you come on over and have a drink with us?
Yeah, exactly.
And he did.
And he was more
for hours. Yeah.
So Woody comes over, sits down with us. We order him up a mojito with no sugar because he's got like the
right,
sugar
he was,
thing.
Yeah, he was anti-sugar.
Anti-sugar. So I look up and I see he had three guys with him. I see one of the guys' faces and I'm like, you're Patty Maloney from the Chieftains. He's like, oh, yeah, thank you. You know, I can't do an Irish accent or not, but he was he's in the Irish.
He was so happy someone recognized him in Cuba.
He's about 4'11". So we bought him a drink, and now we're talking. And Scott is deep in a conversation with Patty Maloney.
He was so comfortable near Baltimore. He plays Baltimore every year. They play what, the minor law?
BSO.
I mean, we were talking. We had a great conversation.
Keep in mind, now there are 12 people in this bar. There's me, Scott, Jerry, the four guys that had come in, and maybe 8 to 10 Cubanos.
Who are not paying any attention
and
to
us. Can't speak a lick of English. They don't know what's going on. They don't know what's going on. So I go to the right, and there's one guy sitting all alone. He's about 5'4".
Well, the introductions start. We got introduced introduced us, and Patty Maloney introduced us to the other people.
Right, and the guy says, hi, I'm Andy Summers. I hit Scott.
Yeah,
I
didn't hear this. I heard it.
Scott, Scott, this is Andy Summers. You know Andy Summers? And you said,
Andy Summers of the Police.
Nice to meet you. let me take a break and we'll pick the story up on the way back in. Let's just say that a lot of mojitos and Cuba Libre.
And let's just say a lot more people showed up at this bar by the time we left.
Yeah, but we weren't really paying attention to that yet. In our little circle of what, 8 of us or 7 of us, the drinks were flying and we were pretty oblivious to what was going on.
All right, we'll finish the story. We'll pick up the story here with some police music right now. It is 5:43. We're stepping out, taking a break. When we leave you, we are at the Bodeguita del Medio. Jerry Scott, Nasty. Patty Maloney of the Chieftains. Andy Summers of the Police, and Woody Harrelson.
And somebody's road manager. It was like Joan Osborne's
some
road
Australian
manager or
guy.
Something. Whatever he
some
was.
Australian guy named Glenn Baker.
Yeah.
All right. Back for more right after this. All right, so when we left you, we were in the Bodeguita del Medio, which is
the Hemingway
bar. Hemingway bar that seats a maximum of 30 people. There are 7 gringos, of which myself, Jerry, Scott from Amici's, and Glenn Baker, who's a road manager, we think Joan Osborne, and Andy Summers of the Police, Patty Maloney of the Chieftains, and Woody Harrelson. Finally, somebody behind the bar says to Woody, "Actor, actor, actor." Yeah. And he says, "Yeah, I'm an actor, you know." And so,
well, it was more like, "Yeah, I'm an actor."
Okay, so Woody gets back, takes pictures, and now they realize that Woody's a celebrity.
Right.
They don't know who the other guys are. They could care less. The whole thing's going on. 3 musicians enter the bar, and I'm having a spirited debate with Andy Summers about we drank. Do you remember we were so drunk we toasted to Zenyatta Madonna?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember?
I remember that.
Do you remember
that.
Drinking
remember
a Zenyatta
that.
Yeah. Madonna?
Drinks were flying. I did not even know the bar was so small. It started getting so crowded. I did not even know there was a band over there. I'm over here with Coleman and Woody and Patty. We're talking. I did not even know there was a band playing.
And they were playing, like, Cuban music. You
with,
know,
with no amps or anything. They were just playing.
Just playing.
A La Cucaracha.
Right. Yeah. They were playing La Cucaracha. That's absolutely what they were playing. But, so they're playing some tunes and having a good time. So finally, I shout out to them. I said, "Play some gringo music, you know?" I said, "I want, you know," because they're playing all Spanish music. That's all they know, right?
And I have no idea this is going on. I'm over here talking to the guys. Right. I have no idea Nestor is even in communication with the band. I don't even know there's guitars in this room.
So the guy starts ripping out some Eagles. And this is like the best I've seen the Eagles. This was a better version of this song.
It was a great acoustic version. Great acoustic version.
I'm sitting with my back to the band. I'm talking to Woody Harrelson, Patty. I hear this start playing, just like this, right?
Right, just like this.
And I hear Don Henley start singing, right? I look around. I go, "That's Nestor singing." Nestor was singing Hotel California, and it sounded awesome.
So you were drunk. You were drunk. No,
Andy,
he's
I'm
right.
Not kidding you.
I was amazed.
I could not believe. First of all, I couldn't believe he was singing. Second of all, I couldn't believe it was awesome, right? So Woody turns around and goes, "Man, this guy is good." And he starts clapping, and he runs up there, and they are just jamming.
You had their admiration.
And
you
the
did.
Whole bar started screaming the choruses. I mean, it was a magical moment.
It was magical. It was mystical.
It really was.
And there were like 25 or 30 people, but it's packed because that's all it could take, basically.
It was awesome.
So Woody and I...
We had the whole bar singing this song.
Woody and I start to do the verses together right here. And Woody took this right here. "Stood in the doorway." It was good. It was awesome.
It was really good.
It was awesome. So we're rocking, right?
Rocking.
Place is going crazy. And now Woody start, and when the song's over, well, I'm going to play a little bit. The song ends, right? So we played like a long version because Woody and I screwed the words up. We went back, picked the song up again. We did like the extended version of Hotel California. So Woody's like, "Man, this is great. We got to get Andy to play." So Woody starts egging Andy on about getting up and playing. And I start egging Andy on. And Andy's like, "Oh, come on, fellas."
He's very, very timid.
Modest is the word.
And laid back. Very
so
laid back.
So Andy's like, you know, they're Cuban guys, and I don't speak any Spanish. I mean, I would feel like I'm violating them.
He felt like he was taking over their stage.
You know, he's like, it's their stage. And he was so enjoying the music. He was really into
really
the music.
Into
really
it.
Enjoying it. So he says, "Finally, I'll go up and play, but somebody's got to tell them, you know, that I, you know, I want to do this out of respect to them." And I went up, I said, "No problem, I'll take care of it." So I go up and I speak some Spanish to the guys, and I said, "Look, this guy is, you know, música de famoso, you know, the whole world." I said, this guy is a major star. And they start understanding, and they ask me, "Who is he?" And I said, la policia. "Ah, la policia." And they said, you know, respectivo, venga aquí. So Andy takes the guitar. Andy looks at me, and he's about 80 pounds soaking wet. And he said, "Somebody's got to sing." He said, "You got to sing if I'm going to play."
You be Sting.
He said, "You've got to sing if I'm going to play." And I said, "Jerry, what are we doing here?" And Jerry says,
"What did I say? I said Roxanne?"
You said Roxanne. He said, "I don't want to do that one." And he said, "Let me tune the guitar." So he started tuning the guitar, And then Jerry starts yelling out, like,
message in a bottle.
Jerry's yelling everything at the
Freebird.
Guy. Freebird.
No, so, I was yelling police.
So Andy Summers says to me, you know, what key do you want to sing this in? I said, just play it. I'll whatever Sting did, I'll do, you know? So Andy's like, gets real close to me and it starts rocking it out, man. Just starts firing it up.
Magical.
It was mystical. It was unbelievable.
It was a Rolling Stone random note.
So, I'm the only one in the bar that apparently knows all the words.
No, you're the only one in the bar with the guts to get up there and sing with Andy Summers.
That's a good point. I mean, that's a good point. That is a good point.
I mean, come on.
So, Andy Summers and I wind up doing a three-song little mini set. We did Every Breath You Take. And the best part is the crowd started getting into it because they knew this one. Even the Cuban people and the Spanish people knew this song. So now the whole bar.
When you see the pictures here, you singing with Andy's, like the veins are bulging out of your neck. I mean, you were singing.
I was bringing it. I was bringing the magic is what I was doing.
And I must say, you were under a lot of pressure because you had had a few in you.
Right.
And you had to come up with the right lyrics. You were standing right next to the guy
who
that was part of the group.
Freaking
who
song.
Wrote the song. You didn't want to insult him. You don't realize how much pressure you were
and
under.
Police
and you hit a home run. You hit a home run.
Well, this,
I must say.
Yeah, this was a tough one to sing. It just, when it gets to the high part, you know, since you're gone, I'll be lost without a trace. I mean, that was tough.
It's good thing you had Woody backing you.
And Woody was behind me 125%, and I really appreciate that. So we did that. Then Jerry starts yelling out the doo-doo-da, and he's yelling out
message
the,
in a bottle. We got
every
a message in a bottle.
He so next thing he does, he goes into a little bit of this right here. This was nice. And we didn't know the words to this at all. But
it sounded so
Jerry good. Yells out, just a castaway.
Yeah, got things started.
And then the crowd starts going into that again.
Oh, it was great.
It was awesome.
It was great.
It was nice. And then finally, we ended with this one right here. And he had the chords going. It was nice. So I think I was the only one in the bar could sing this one because this one was
absolutely
ridiculous.
Yeah. Very tough.
So I was doing this one.
You took it to tough. You took it to a new level.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not all about all that. I mean, yeah. Sting one and a half.
Woody looked over and goes, of Rocks, these nights man. Like this are what memories are made of.
Oh.
Everybody will remember that night.
Oh,
yeah,
it was
in that bar.
And we got photographic evidence is going to be all over the web.
It was everyone's first trip to Cuba, even Woody and you know and Andy Summers. They had never been
we
there.
We were all in a place.
You
know, where,
as memorable as the night was to us, it was equally as memorable to them. You remember the guy brought back the pictures? They scarfed those pictures.
$5, man. They all wanted a picture.
They wouldn't give it up.
They
I mean, those
right
guys
away.
Had a great night.
Yep. Yeah. So we were there a good 2 hours, and they started playing more Spanish songs, Guantanamera, and you know stuff that people would
La Bamba.
Know. They played La Bamba. Yeah.
They wouldn't play Feliz Navidad for me.
So we scurried out of there probably about 4 a.m. or thereabouts, and the head was pounding the next morning about 9 a.m., and I ran into my good friend Julio from Tommy's Mexican Restaurant in San Francisco outside a disco later in the evening.
Now, you just brushed right over that. Literally ran into him. Neither one of you knew
you didn't know
you were
going to be
the
there.
Country.
No, I had no idea.
You ran into him in Havana,
this
Cuba.
This guy is probably one of my top, my 15 best friends in the world. I mean, this guy is like, if I get married tomorrow, he flies in. I mean, this guy is a great friend of mine that I've made in my travels. Owns the best Mexican restaurant in San Francisco. I live at that place when I'm, you know, on the West Coast. And I just ran into him outside of a club. I mean, just ran into him. So he's there. He's a huge baseball fan. He meets me in the morning. We have breakfast. And we go to the game. And you want to – the search thing we've already been through.
Right.
Let's go to the game.
It's game day.
It's game day.
We're
it's,
on the bus going to the game.
It's hot as hell. I mean, and we're –
But
look, we're hung.
Let's
I mean,
set
let's
the
be
scene.
Honest.
Let's set the scene, though. This was the mother of all days in Cuba.
Oh, no question.
This is a day they had been looking forward to for 40 years.
This is 33 Super Bowls on one day.
Absolutely.
On one day.
As the media bus is heading towards the stadium, the streets are packed. People are walking towards the stadium. They have their Cuban flags in their hands. I mean, they're all going to the same place, whether they're getting in or not. Let's face it, most of them were not getting in because it was invitation only. It was 55,000, mostly of Fidel's friends that were getting in there. But people just wanted to be a part of the scene. And they had already, most of them had already gotten there around 8 or 9 in the morning.
And they were basically surrounding the stadium. People that couldn't get in just wanted to be part of the vibe and were hanging outside the stadium. So the game started. Then they all ran inside to watch it on TV.
Yes. I mean, I understand that you could walk through the streets of Havana. They were basically empty. And all you could hear is the play-by-play of the game.
Scott, tell the story about outside of Bodeguita on Saturday night when the baseball game ended. We got to tell the baseball story Saturday night, too.
Yeah.
There was a brawl.
That's right. Oh, this is a great story. Go ahead, Scott.
We were watching the Game 2 of the World Series on TV in the bar. This is pre-Woody. And there was a controversial play where it was a bunt attempt. The pitcher dove for it. It looked like it hit the pitcher's glove and fair territory went foul. They called it a fair ball because it looked like the pitcher hit it. Well, in replay, it didn't. But the manager came out and basically manhandled the ump.
Just shoved him, threw him, grabbed him.
I mean, in the States.
Manhandled him.
In the States, it's a 20-game suspension or a permanent ban.
It was outrageous.
Right. It was really outrageous.
But the ump blew the call, ended up costing the team. Well, the home team ended up winning the game because of the bad call.
It was ninth inning. It was 7-5 game. Lead-off home run. There's one out. Guy lays down a bunt. Pitcher doesn't touch the bunt. The ball should have rolled foul. They call it a single. Guy steals second base. Next guy singles, ties the game.
And it
just went to hell from there. It was like the Maryland game.
Yeah, the wheels fell off and they won.
Next guy hits a double off the wall. Next guy hits a single and they win. As they won, we literally
were in a cab.
Grabbed our cab and went around the corner. Three guys run out of a bar and jumped onto the hood of our cab.
Waving their arms, jumping up and down.
Industriales! En viva, Industriales!
It was a great come-from-behind win for them.
Oh, man.
It was insanity.
This is game two of the World Series. Right. And now, they had lost the first game
at home.
So, and they were down 7-5 in the ninth inning.
Yes.
And they had this comeback. And these people were in the streets honking
jumping
their horns.
On the car. It was insanity. Yeah.
And our cabbie just looked at us. He said, local. Okay, so game time on Sunday, about 1 o'clock. We're in the stadium, and basically I'm looking to get a picture with Jimmy Buffett, and because the rock star thing, we should go back, because people are asking, what the hell are Woody Harrelson and Andy Summers doing? We haven't explained that yet.
No.
There is a thing called the Music Bridge. That is a group that every year goes into a third world country somewhere and makes music with famous American, British, Australian, you know, first world Western civilization rock stars.
But there hadn't been anything in Cuba like this since
1959.
Well, I know Billy Joel was there in the 70s.
But this musical exchange, it said in USA Today, 1959.
This is a musical exchange, and unbelievable. I mean, Buffett, Bonnie Raitt, David Sanborn, Andy Summers, and Stuart Copeland from The Police, Patty Maloney, Peter Buck from R.E.M.
Well, what they did is they took 18 names, put them in a hat, 18 Cuban names, put them in a hat, drew one of each, and then those two artists spent the week writing a song together.
Montel Jordan was one of them, and they put names in the hat. Mick Fleetwood was there. Mm-hmm. It was an incredible thing.
But Indigo Girls.
Indigo Girls were there. Joan Osborne, gave the best performance.
Yeah, I mean, she was electrifying. I don't know much about her, but she was great.
And we wind up going to that on Sunday. I'm sure we'll get to that in a couple of minutes, but there were a lot of rock stars at the stadium, too. Mick Fleetwood was there. Don was there. Who's the guy that hangs out with Jack Nicholson at the
Lou Adler.
Lou Adler.
And Lou Adler was there.
He fainted at the game.
Yeah, in the first inning.
First inning, he Jimmy
is that who went down?
Yeah, it was Lou Adler. We came back. We caught up on our sleep a little bit, and we went the Music Bridge concert. Now, the way the concert worked was all week long they rehearsed songs, and they played them one time, one night, one place. These songs will never be recorded anywhere. They will never be available on CD or any other.
It was videotaped somehow. Yeah. But I don't know who bought it.
Yeah, and professionally, too. I mean, it looked like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
They had steady cams.
And it'll be on the Cuban black market in probably a week.
Yeah, probably will.
It was at the Karl Marx Theater,
The Karl Marx Theater, where the K and one of the R's
were burned out.
So it's the Arl Max. In the pictures, it's the Arl Max Theater. But we basically snuck our way in. There was zero security. And Scott and I basically watched the entire show from the stage.
Yeah, from the wings, sitting on right on the side.
Turns out all the security was at the baseball game.
Right,
all
of course. Jimmy Buffett and I are hanging out, rapping. Scott took the absolute. Apologize publicly for what you did.
Well, first of all, I took how many pictures? 300 pictures.
300 pictures.
How many pictures did not come out perfect?
One. Now, which one do you think that? It's not me in the barber chair. It's not
one picture out of 300 is not perfect, and it's the one of you and Buffett.
Parrothead.
It's not just not perfect. It's horrible. It's disgraceful.
Is that the backlit one that you look like two shadows?
No, it's the blurry one.
It's the blurry one. You know what it looks like? It looks like I went to Ocean City and they had a cardboard cutout of Jimmy and I stood next to it.
Is that it?
It does not look
horrible. Oh, that's
horrible.
Not horrible.
Well,
it's
we should preface this by saying that Jimmy blew you off at the ballpark big time, all right? But we were able to recover a couple of hours later. That was an amazing thing.
Jimmy and I hung out, and we're okay, and I got nothing negative to say.
Now, I love Jimmy Buffett, but he is not a friendly fella.
I love Jimmy, and I love Jimmy unconditionally.
There's nothing bad you can say about Jimmy.
I love Jimmy unconditionally.
He is no Joan Osborne.
Well, yeah. Good point. Well, basically, we did that, and we went back to the place we had dinner the night before, and that kind of wraps up. So we had a 6 a.m. wake-up call.
And a half hours on the air, and you did not mention one thing about how beautiful the Cuban women were.
All right, let's talk about the Cuban women. Come on, let's talk about the Cuban women right now.
They were outstanding.
Driving in, not just outstanding, like in just a matter of attractive, but like nice haircuts, nice clothing. Not just the women too. The men were prideful and dressed well, and as much as I heard they don't have soap in that kind, I didn't smell BO in 3 days.
No,
I mean
I think the American Press Corps smelled much worse.
Yeah, I was told one bar of soap a month for each family.
That's what I heard. Yeah, absolutely.
But the Cuban women, they would not let them come back to our hotel.
All right, we've talked about the best part. What are the worst parts about
leaving the airport the last day, getting to the airport?
Yeah, just the mass confusion.
And the Orioles even complained about this. Like, they weren't going to have to pay a $20 tax to leave like the other common folks. This was some kind of surprise. I read the Orioles were upset. They were faced with this $20 departure tax. And most
Caribbean countries,
right. They have a departure tax. They charge $20 for it. It's just there was only one person taking the $20 for about 500 people.
It wasn't the money. It was just a nightmare. I mean, it's funny seeing Bonnie Raitt and Dan Duquette waiting in line behind
and
us.
Mick Fleetwood.
It didn't matter who you were.
Bob
there was no
Watson.
VIP section.
Bonnie Raitt's got her guitar over her shoulder.
Yeah, standing in line behind us.
Right. Dragging a bag in a pair of flip-flops.
We called her Bonnie Waite. I mean, it was so long.
Well, look, we'll sign it off here, and I'll step out, take a break, and we'll wrap things up here. But I want to thank you, gentlemen, for making my Cuban experience what it was.
Let's do it again in 40 years.
Let's do it again in June.
Yeah. We'll just have to go through another country to get there, huh?
Oh, man.
Hope the State Department's not listening.
Encouraging breaking international laws. Thank you, Jerry. Always a pleasure.
Well, Jerry did break 17 international laws this weekend.
Jerry!
That's far off.
Jerry. I'm not going to implicate Jerry, just to say that you made the trip worthwhile. I'm glad you were on it.
It was fun.
Scott, you were on it.
I appreciate you letting me go on it, Nestor. It was an honor and a privilege, and it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I will always treasure it.
All of your production help around here on special events and all that good stuff. So, all right. Break out. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up right after this.